There are over 3,000 verses in the Bible that mention the family. And many of the Bible's greatest truths are couched in family terms. One specialist in the field of human behavior has said that it probably takes more intelligence, more endurance, more patience, more healthy emotion to rear a happy human being than it takes to be a psychiatrist, an atomic physicist, or a politician. And I believe that. And child rearing these days, I believe, is more complex than it was a generation ago. Now, before I dig into some basic principles on successful parenthood, let me suggest that we need to establish our objectives. What is your objective in rearing a child? For the goal set will always determine the course followed. And what your objective is in rearing a family will determine entirely what you will do. Now, some parents have said to me, my objective is to keep my children from being frustrated. Well, I pity you if that's your objective, because you will never be able to achieve it. And you should be mature enough to know that you should not even want to achieve it. Everybody needs to be frustrated at times. Everybody needs to see their own plans fall through. Everyone needs to face problems. No one grows without it. Some parent says, I want to keep my children happy. That's too paltry a goal. Impossible to achieve. You can never keep anybody always happy. You shouldn't even want to. Happiness comes as a byproduct of doing other things. We must have the objective of rearing our children responsibly so they make a contribution, so they grow up with a strong self-image, and they go through life not leaning on other people, but they go through life making a contribution to other people. In our country, we still have about 15,000 wild horses. Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, Arizona. 15,000 Mustangs that are roaming those mountains. And not a one of these horses has ever been touched by a man. They've never been broken to a bridle or saddle. They're wild, unbroken, self-willed. Now let me ask you, of what value, of what use are those wild horses to God or to man? And you will have to say, they're of no use whatever. And the reason for that is, they're wild. They're unbroken. But if you could put your hand on those Mustangs, and you could break them to a bridle and break them to a saddle, those wild horses would immediately become very, very useful. And all of their fantastic potential would be brought under control. They would be just as strong as ever, but now useful. And that's the picture of every person that is born into the human race. With fantastic God-given potential. But if all of that potential is not focused, if we haven't learned what it is to obey, if our wills have not been broken, if we don't understand discipline, we will live and die. And all of that God-given potential will have been wasted. Some basic principles are these. Parents are responsible for children until children are old enough to be responsible themselves. Parents bear a total responsibility for every child they bring into the world. People often ask me about birth control. And I say often, well, the Bible says nothing for or against birth control. God leaves that decision up to any couple to decide how many children you're going to have. But I say immediately, but never forget this. It's easy to have children. But God's going to hold you responsible for the social, the intellectual, the moral, the physical, the spiritual development of every child you bring into the world. Another principle is this, that the parent is to the child what God is to the parent until the child knows God for himself. And whatever God is to me, I must be to my child. God is my lover, my protector, my provider, my teacher, my guide, my disciplinarian, everything. And that's what I must be to my child. What God is to me. Now, let me cite to you some simple, basic, but all important principles. Number one, Proverbs 22:6. Solomon said, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. A free translation of that verse would go something like this. Train up a child in the way of his natural aptitudes, and when he is old, he will not be a failure. Very practical. Now, the one thing that that verse tells us is this. That the responsibility for determining the way a person goes rests upon the parent, not the child. God says to parents, train up a child in the way he shall go. So the parent has the responsibility to determine the way the child should go. That's quite different from today, isn't it? Where parents ask children, which way do you want to go? And then they lead them in that way. You know, kind of like the fellow that said, there goes the crowd. I must follow them because I'm their leader. And so parents spend all of their lives trying to find out from the child what he wants to do, the way he'd like to go. And then they just very sweetly and politely lead him in that way. Now God says, no, no. The parent determines the way the child should go. He determines that for the child. And then leads him in that way. That makes a lot of sense. The parents have been here longer. You know, parents usually precede children. They're usually older. They usually have a little more wisdom. So God says, you determine the way your child should go and grow, and lead him in that way. A man said to me some time ago, he said, well, I'll tell you something. He said, I feel that every child that comes into the family is a unique human being, and I dare not determine anything for my children. So I let them decide everything for themselves, and if they want to go to church, I'll take them. But if they don't, I'm not going to make them. I said, you know, it's an interesting thing that you don't care as much about your children as you care about your tomato vines. I said, you plant a cheap little insignificant tomato vine in your backyard and you put a little stick on one side of it. And you tie it to that stick so it doesn't crawl along the ground. Then you put another stick on the other side and you tie it to that stick so you give it some direction so you can get some tomatoes. But I said, God's given you a soul. And you don't care enough about that boy and that girl to put a little stick around them to give them some direction. So instead, we say to our little children, you know, we say, well, honey, what do you want to do? You tell Daddy what you'd like to do. Would you like to go to bed tonight? Or would you rather stay up? You know, which do you prefer? Would you like to eat your potatoes and gravy? Or would you just rather have dessert? How do you feel about it? Well, honey, would you like to wear a coat and a hat today? You know, it's zero outside. Or would you rather get pneumonia? You know, which do you prefer? How utterly foolish to put upon a child an unnatural responsibility. To commit to an ignorant, inexperienced child the responsibility of determining what he ought to do. What does a child know about a proper diet? What does a child know about how much sleep he ought to have? What does a child know about how to protect his body? What does a child know about God and his responsibility? So God has put upon each one of us parents the responsibility to determine the way our children should go and then to lead them in that way. Now the second principle is this. Every child must have, every day he lives, an unconditional love and acceptance. In Romans 5, it says that God loved us and accepted us when we were enemies, alien, weak, helpless. And God always loves people. He doesn't approve of everything they do, but God loves people, and love is flowing out from God in a stream all the time. And God says we must love our children exactly that way. So it's a parent's responsibility to provide for the child all of the experiences that will give that child the love, the understanding, the recognition, and the adventure that it needs. Now our problem is that many parents were reared in a home where they were rejected. They were shot down. So now they are afraid of losing the love of their children. And they don't understand what real love is. An Episcopal priest was working with the hippies in Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. And he said, of the thousands of hippies that I have counseled, I have discovered one thing about all of them. They have come out of a home where there was a total lack of love. They were given things to live with. They were given nothing to live for. They were given possessions, but not experiences. The radical campus leaders of Berkeley, San Jose, Santa Barbara, 40% of them have said, we have never in our lifetime had a relationship of love with a father, a mother, a brother, or a sister. And I'm saying that our children need, above everything else, a total, unconditional love and acceptance. When we say to a child, if you don't do this, mommy won't love you. Or if you do this, daddy will love you. What are we saying? We are putting an unbearable, unnatural burden on a child, saying to that child, you are responsible for my happiness. I'm depending on you to do the right things so that I'm contented all the time. No child can produce that. But the parent must love that child regardless of how it's acting, what it's doing. And the child grows up knowing that though my parents may not have agreed with everything I've done, they've always loved me. They've always loved me. I was riding on a train years ago. I'll never forget this.
I saw a woman across the aisle with a little boy, cute little fellow. And in listening to the conversation, I knew that the father was in the military and they were on their way to see him. And this little boy was doing what he's supposed to do, jumping up and down. And riding all over the train window, you know. And he'd blow his breath on the window and write, you know, and make a lot of noise. Just what God made him to do. Using all the springs God put in him. But the dear woman couldn't stand this. And she screamed at that little fella, and you could hear her from one end of the train to the other. Finally, she said to him, "If you don't sit down and be quiet, I'll never let you see your daddy again." Frightened little boy sat down for a minute and looked straight ahead. And after a while, he jumped up and began to play a little and ride on the window. She screamed at him again. She said, "Look out that window. You see how fast that train's going? You want me to throw you out this window? I'll throw you right off this train. And you'll never see your daddy again. Is that what you want?" And the little frightened boy sat down again. Ah, that was unbelievable. I could hardly control myself. And if that woman hadn't weighed 275, I think I'd have worked her over. And I thought, what is she building into this little boy? The insecurity. And undoubtedly that little boy someday will sit in a psychiatrist's office with a strong sense of rejection, inferiority, resentment. Now, did you hear what I said? A child has an unconditional acceptance and love. And I stress that word, unconditional. You know, the home should be the safest place in the world. Your children should grow up in that home knowing I'm important here. I'm taken seriously here. And I'm loved for what I am. Not for what I do. Not because I play first trumpet in the school band. Not because I'm on the football team. Not because I get straight A's. But I am loved because of who I am, and I'm part of this family. And I say a very safe place. So that child can express himself as he grows up into teenage years. He can express himself. He can test out his new ideas, and he is never shot down. Always taken seriously. And if your child loves what you do not love, for example, as I look over this crowd of adults, I know I am safe in assuming that some of you parents do not like rock music, right? And I'm also safe in assuming that some of your children do. And there are people in this audience who love the old hymns of the church. And they love Bach and Beethoven and anything long-haired. And you despise that beat. Now listen to me. Don't misunderstand me here. You have one child that loves that music that you love. You have another child that loves the music that you despise. And I'm saying to you, you dare not favor the one that agrees with you more. That child growing up disagreeing with you dare not sense that because we don't agree, I am less loved and appreciated. I say a safe place where they're accepted unconditionally. I mean to this extent, that if your daughter comes home, God forbid that it should happen, but if your daughter comes home and says, through her embarrassment and guilt, "Mother, Mother, I'm pregnant. And if the police call your home and say, 'We picked up your boy for passing drugs, dropping acid,' I say that then you never reject them. I mean that in that situation, you're able to say, 'This tears me apart. It breaks my heart. And honey, I'm embarrassed as you are. And I don't know what happened, and maybe we failed, but honey, I want you to know something. We love you here. And you'll always belong to us, and we will never reject you.' Of course this is wrong. Of course it's sin. But be assured that we love you here. And I've had many parents ask me, 'Well, I have a teenager, girl or boy, and last year a million teenagers ran away from home. The greatest number, 13-year-old girls.' And I've had parents say to me, 'Well, my boy, my girl has threatened to run away.' And I think they will. And if they don't get their way, if they can't have what they want, they're holding this club over me that they're going to run away. What should I do?" And I have said many, many times, you must abide by the basic principles that you have established in your home. And you can never allow a child just moving into an adult to become the general of the army. But I said, remember one thing. Say it, and say it over and over again. Honey, if you're going to leave, I want you to remember one thing. We love you here. We love you here. And if you ever leave us, I want you to know that we'll always have a place for you. And we love you. And you'll always be a part of us." And I said, let that be the last thing they hear when they go out the door. A child must be accepted unconditionally. And if you love a child and they know it, nothing you have to withhold from that child will adversely affect him. But if you don't love your child and he's not sure of it, no matter what you give him, in the way of possessions or freedom, will ever compensate. You know, parenthood is a costly thing. Many times I think we're selfish. We don't want to undergo the pain, the sadness, the discomfort of being a parent. We don't want to see our children suffer. So we always rescue our children. Whenever they have responsibility, whenever they face a problem, whenever they get themselves in a jam, we always hurry to rescue them. Because we do not want the pain of seeing them suffer. And parenthood can become a very selfish thing. I remember one of our boys, wonderful boy, was in college. Second year of college. And I made an agreement with him. He'd asked a big favor of me, and I said, all right, let's make a deal. If you do this, 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 and so forth, I'll do this for you. He said, wonderful, wonderful. And he went away to school. And I was sure in my heart that he was doing everything he agreed to do. Didn't question it. One day he was home for a couple of days, and I happened to be home a few days. And it was on his birthday. And I happened to go into a room, and I saw a little book on the floor. A diary. And I didn't recognize it. And it had fallen out of his pocket. Accidentally. And I picked up this little thing off the floor, opened it up, wondering what it was, and on the page that I opened, in his own handwriting, he had written some things that told me he was double-crossing me. And everything he'd agreed to do, he was consciously, deliberately refusing to do. And I stood in that room, not believing my eyes, and I thought, he double-crossed me. Look at that. And I stood, I quietly closed the door, and I thought, what am I going to do about it? Am I going to just let that go and act like I don't know it? Am I going to let it pass and let him go on conning me, never having to face his problem? And then I thought, well, but I can't say anything today because I'm leaving on a plane in an hour. And that'll be the last thing he remembers from me. And it's on his birthday. Can I ruin his birthday by bringing him face to face with his problem? And I'll tell you, it's tough being a parent. It costs to be a parent. And I stood in that room, tears in my eyes, looking at that little book, and I said, dear God, what am I going to do with this boy? 6'4". Sophomore in college. And I made a decision. I decided I couldn't let it go. That I would be sinning against him by letting it go. And letting him grow up thinking that it's all right. Nobody ever knows. And I did the toughest thing I ever had to do in my life. And I walked into the kitchen where he was seated at the table. And he's a very happy kid. And I dropped that little book on the table in front of him. And I said, son, I hate to say this, and it tears me apart, but, you know, I saw this little book on the floor, and I opened it and found out that you haven't been keeping your part of our agreement. And you've been double-crossing me. And his face turned white. And I said, son, I'd give anything if this weren't so. And I'm so sorry about it. And I'm sorry it's on your birthday. And I'm sorry it's on a day when we're going to say goodbye and not see each other for a long time. But, son, I said, we can't let it go. And I said, I'm sorry. But from now on, I can't do what I said. Because you haven't kept your word to me. And it's your problem from now on out. And that big basketball star began to shake and cry. And we all stood in the kitchen and cried. And we got in the car to go to the airport, not saying a word. And we got to the airport, and I said, son, I'm so sorry. And that big boy put out his hand, and tears running down his cheeks, he said, Dad, you're doing the right thing. And he said, it kills you and it's killing me, but you're doing the right thing. And I got on an airplane and flew to San Francisco and cried all the way across the country. I thought, dear God, do something with that boy. Make that boy what he ought to be. And I sat there in a little back seat in that airplane and thought, you know, it costs to be a parent. It costs something. Unconditional love. And the payoff came. The payoff came when years later, out of the jungles of Vietnam, with his buddies dying all around him, on Thanksgiving Day. And he said on a little tape, I may not be around tomorrow the way things are happening now. And I'm sitting here in the bush thinking of home. And I just want to say one thing. I've done many, many things that I'm sure you didn't like. Many things you did not agree with. But I'm so thankful that you still loved me and you never rejected me. And I thought, dear God, we didn't even know we were doing the right thing all the time. And a child must always, always be loved. But a child must have a consistent training and discipline. What does the Bible say? Very clear. Discipline your son in his early years while there is hope. And if you don't, you'll ruin his life. That's what Solomon said. If you refuse to discipline your son, it proves you don't love him. If you love him, you'll be prompt to punish him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and child trains every son he receives. Children must have discipline. Discipline is the price you pay for freedom. Do you hear that? The price you pay for freedom. Freedom from a wasted life. Freedom from debilitating habits. The price you pay for freedom is discipline. And we must teach this to our children. You should never say no to a child unless you have to. But if you ever say it, you ought to stay with it. And if you say no, you should say it kindly, unitedly, husband and wife together, consistently, and always accepting them. You say to a child, you can't leave until you eat your dinner, you better stick by that. You better stay with that. How will that child ever know anything about integrity if you don't keep your word? If you say to a child, you can't have dessert till you eat your food, you better stay with that. Of course, don't put a half a carload of food on their plate before you say it, though. Don't do that. No. If you say to a child, if you do this, you're going to get a reward, you better see to that. And if you say to them, if you do not do this thing that we've agreed on, there's going to be punishment, you better see that there is. How will a child know to keep his word if nobody keeps his word to him? That's the way you teach children integrity. A friend of mine said to me one time, he said, I don't understand my boy. He tells me when he's going to come in at night and then disregards it. Tells me what he's going to do with the car, then disregards it. He said, no integrities. I can't stand it. I said, just a minute. I said, you remember all the times you've talked to me about your marriage problem? And how you've let your wife time and time again talk you out of something you promised? And how you changed your mind so many, many times with those children? I said, how does that boy learn integrity if he doesn't see it and hear it in his father? My dear friend, Dr. Bob Smith, tells about his own family. He says they had a little girl in the high chair one day. She'd never acted this way before. A little dish of oatmeal on the table. She said, I'm not going to eat it. And her mother looked in surprise. Oh, look at that. I'm not going to eat it. I want to get down. So the mother very kindly and sweetly said, all right, honey, that's fine. If you want to get down and play, fine, be happy to let you. But now listen to mother, listen to me. You are not going to get anything else to eat until you eat this oatmeal. Now, did you understand me? Did you hear me? You are not going to get anything else to eat until you eat this oatmeal. That's all right, I'm going to play, I'm going to get out. So she got down, played, thought, uh-oh, I've gained a fantastic victory, you know. Two or three hours later, Mommy, I'm starved. Oh, well, wonderful, wonderful. You want to eat? Come on, honey. Put her up in the high chair, warmed up the oatmeal. You know, didn't give it to her cold. Warmed up the oatmeal and put it back in front of her. Says, well, honey, here it is. Oh, I don't want that. I don't want that. I'm going to play. All right, honey. Fine, you can play. But remember now, you know, Mother always says what she means. You can always count on it. And you'll not get anything to eat till you eat the oatmeal. So she played a couple of more hours. Mother, I'm going to die. Oh, that's wonderful, honey. We'll fix you something to eat. Put her in the chair, warmed up the oatmeal again. Put it out in front of you. Here it is, honey. Oh, I don't want that. You remember what I said? You know, I always keep my word to you. And as soon as you eat this, you can have something else. And finally, she got the message. And she gobbled up the oatmeal. And they said we've never had a problem with her since. You see? And you know as well as I that every child tests his parents' patience, perseverance, honesty all the time to find out where the limits really are. Consistent discipline. But there's one other very important matter. We must teach our children that a tantrum never pays. And they never can accomplish anything by whining, complaining, or crying. Now, this is a very important principle. For the Bible says, do everything without murmuring or complaining. And the one thing that really upset God was the children of Israel in the Old Testament griping and complaining about everything. And he said, if that's the way you're going to be, you can stay and die in the wilderness. Isn't anything worse than a complaining, griping, negative person? You know what a child does? Throws a little tantrum, whines and cries. And the first couple, you know, are his fault, and all the rest are your fault. And he's going to find out if he can get what he wants. Now, listen to me. If you ever give in to your children because they whine and complain, do you know what you're doing? You are teaching them a principle of life that is not true and does not work. You are preparing them for life, teaching them something that's going to give them problems the rest of their days. Because life isn't that way, is it? You don't get what you want in life by crying, do you? Suppose you drive down the street, and you break the speed limit. And the police officer gives you a ticket and says, all right, now you appear in court, talk to the judge. And when your case is called and the judge says, speeding 60 miles an hour in a 25-mile-hour zone, what do you have to say for yourself? And so right there in the courtroom, you throw a tantrum. And you fall on the floor, and you whine, and you cry, and you pound the floor. You know what's going to happen? Why, that judge is going, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were going to act that way. I didn't anticipate anything like this. Well, if that's the way you feel, we'll cancel the charges. Why, certainly. Oh, my, yes. No, everything is all right. So then you go to the bank and you borrow some money. And you say to the banker, all right, now I'll pay you on such and such a day. And you sign your name and that day comes and you're not there. And the banker calls you and you come in. And the banker says, now, I think today is the day when we were to have some word from you. Well, what are your plans regarding this note? And right there in the plush office of the banker, you fall on the floor. And you pound the floor, and you cry, and you whine, and you gripe. Oh, the banker says, I didn't know you were going to be that way. Oh, well, listen, if that's the way it is, we just cancel the note.
Oh, certainly. You know, I hate to see a grown man cry. Oh, yeah. We just cancel that note. Why, sure, you know, come in anytime. We love to do business with you. Then you murder somebody. And you stand before a judge and a jury and you whine and cry and throw a tantrum. And the judge and jury say, oh, not guilty. Everything fine. You didn't mean it, did you? No. And don't ever get that idea about God either. That God in the Bible tells you on every page that Jesus Christ is His Son who came to die for us, for our sins, to forgive us. Don't ever get the idea that God doesn't mean that. And that someday you're going to stand before God and He's just an old white-haired grandfather and you're going to whine and cry a little bit. And say, well, you know, I didn't really know you meant that. And I didn't receive Jesus Christ. And I, you know, I didn't commit my life to Him. And you didn't mean that, did you? I'll tell you a secret. You'll discover He did. I was sitting at a pastor's breakfast table one day. The children began to come to the table, and the mother had placed before each plate a sweet roll. And the father reached over and cut in halves the sweet roll for his little boy. And the little boy came to the table, and he said, who cut my roll? Well, son, I cut it. I didn't want my roll cut. Did I tell you I wanted my roll cut? No, I don't want my roll cut. And I'm not going to eat that. And the father said, oh, son, I'm so sorry. Oh, Daddy, so sorry that he cut your roll. I should have asked you if you wanted your roll cut. And I'm so sorry. Honey, maybe we could find another roll for you that is not cut. And then the next time, if I ever think of cutting your roll, then I'll be sure to ask you, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. And the little fellow said, no, I don't care. I'm not going to eat it. And he jumped down, ran over to the other side of the table into the arms of his mother. And she pulled him up and held him and patted him to protect him from the dirty old man that cut his roll. We sin against our children when we do that. But there's one more thing. Parenthood demands everything. It demands our creative best. It's such a creative challenge. And you've discovered this to be true. That every child is different. Different temperament, different personality. One child responds in one way, one in another. One responds to one kind of treatment, one to another. You look at one child, they get the message. You talk to another child, they get the message. But another child has to have a little more to get the message. That's the biggest challenge of it all. Did you ever get to a place where you didn't know what to do? We've been there. And you've tried everything you know to try with your children. And you don't know how to get to them. You don't know how to get them to respond. You know, Jesus treated His disciples in this way. He had Peter, who was impetuous, impulsive, always speaking first. Leader. Jesus dealt with him in one way. Then He had another fellow who was retiring and shy and hesitant. And Jesus handled him in a different way. Then He had one disciple who was suspicious, questioning, and Jesus dealt with him in a different way, and Jesus, in a beautiful way, was dealing with each one of His boys according to their need and temperament. That's the way you do in parenthood. What do you do when you don't know what to do? What do you do when you've tried everything with a child and you still can't reach them? Every child, as the salesman would say, has a hot button. You know, a salesman tries to find somebody's hot button, their interest,
where they respond. And if you can press that button, touch that place in that person's life, they will open up. Every person has that. And the Bible says if you lack wisdom, ask of God and He'll give it to you. If you don't know what to do, God will help you to find out what to do and to reach that child. So you never say, I don't care what happens to you. You never throw in the towel and say, I don't know what to do with you anymore. Go ahead and have your own way. Oh, no, no, no. But instead you say to God, Lord, I don't know what to do anymore. And we've got to find a way to help this child and to reach him. I remember years ago, one of my little boys was giving me a heartache. He was stealing things. He was stealing from his mother's pocketbook. He was stealing things from the store. He was stealing any little old thing he could get his hands on. And you say to me, Peterson, you mean your boy was stealing? You bet he was. He learned it from the deacon's kid. Yeah. And I'd talk to that boy. I'd pray with that boy. I'd discipline that boy. And he kept right on stealing. I'd punish him. And he'd cry his little heart out. And he'd look at me, wondering if I still loved him. And then I'd sit down and talk with him. I'd reason with him. And I'd explain it all. He'd, yeah, yeah. Then the next day he'd steal. Then I'd pray with him. And we'd get by the bed and he'd confess his sins to God and so forth. And everything would be all right until he saw something, you know, the next day. I didn't know what to do anymore. We had one boy, I could look at him, and he got the message. We had another little fella, we could just say a kind word to him, and he understood it, but this boy didn't get the message. And I was saying, dear God, what am I going to do? We've got to find a way to get this boy. There's got to be some place where I can touch him and where he'll open up to me. So one day he and I were cleaning the garage. And the children and their mother was planning to visit her parents in California for a few weeks. And this little boy's grandfather was a candy and toy dealer. Beautiful setting for a thief. And all of his candy and toys were out in the open. In all of his garage. And I said, son, I don't know what to do anymore. I said, you know, you still steal, don't you? I've talked to you. I've punished you. I've prayed with you, but you still do it. I said, what am I going to do with you? I said, you know, maybe you better not go to California. Daddy, you mean I can't go? Oh, Daddy, you mean everybody's going to go but me? I said, son, you know that your grandpa has all those toys, all of that candy, all of those little things right out in the open. And I said, if I ever let you go out there, you'd rob him blind. He said, no, I wouldn't, Daddy, no, I... Oh, I said, you've told me that before. Yeah, but, Daddy, I mean it this time. Well, I said, you've said that before, too. Yeah, but, Daddy, I really, really mean it. I've heard that a few times, too. I said, I couldn't dare let you go out there and steal everything from your grandfather. Couldn't do it. And all of a sudden, God dropped an idea into my mind. I'd never read it in any book. I'd never thought about it. But all the time I'd been saying, God, give me an idea. And I said to this boy, son, let me tell you something. I said, do you know, if a person goes out to buy a house, they have to sign their name on a piece of paper. And whenever they sign their name, it means they can never go back on it. I said, now it's one thing if that person just says it. It's another thing altogether if they sign their name. And if you go to the bank to borrow money, you sign your name. And I said, if anybody ever signs their name, they can never go back on it. They can't change their mind. That's it. And I began to stress to him in ways that he could understand that if you ever sign your name, and I said, son, don't you ever, as long as you live, ever sign your name to anything that you're not going to do. Because you have to do it if you sign your name. You have to. And we kept on cleaning the garage. And finally he said, well, Daddy, can I go? I said, I don't know. I don't know. I said, there's only one condition that I could ever let you go there. I said, you'd have to sign your name to something. Well, what? What would you want me to sign my name to? I said, I don't know. I don't know. That's up to you. I said, I just know one thing, that if you ever sign your name to anything, you can't go back on it. I know that. And I said, you know, you'll have to figure out something, whatever you want to sign your name to. But that's your decision. Three days later, he came walking up to me, smiling. His little hand was closed. And he said, Daddy, I got something for you. I said, what do you have? And he had this little piece of paper in his hand. This one, right here. Over 20 years ago. This is the piece. Clutched in his little hand, he said, Daddy, I got something for you. Let me see it, And I took out this paper. I promise. I will not touch, T-U-C-H, or take anything that is not mine. Signed his name. I said, you wrote that, didn't you? Yeah, I wrote it. I said, that's your signature, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. I said, you can go. You can go. Because you signed your name and you couldn't go back on it if you wanted to. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to carry this note with me all the time you're in California. And every morning, I'm going to take this note out and read it again. And I'm going to look at your signature. And I'm going to know that everything's all right. And then I wrote him letters while he was in California and said, you know, I saw that little note today and I saw your signature. I'm glad everything's working out all right for you out there. And I know that boy learned something. And I learned something. And I know that everything was all right. And I said, Lord, thank you for giving me a little idea to help when I really need it. Before you leave here tonight, I want you to look up and say, dear God, give me wisdom with my children. Give me love for my children. Enable me to discipline them with love. And before you leave, I want you to do these two things. I want you to forgive your own parents. Everyone here has been failed by their parents. There are no perfect people. Your parents, my parents, failed us. You've got to forgive them. You cannot go through life holding something against them. And I want you to say honestly to God, if you have any ill feeling or resentment toward your parents, I forgive them. I forgive my parents. And then the second thing, I want you to go home tonight and say something to your children. Say, I love you. I'm glad you're a part of my family. I'm glad you're on the team. I'm glad God gave you to us. Say a word to them. Put an arm around them or pat them on the bottom as you go by and say, you know, I think you're great. And I'm glad you're part of our family. But I want you to say one word of appreciation to your children tonight. And if they're not with you anymore, drop them a little note. Give them a call and just say, I remember one time I was in Texas and I got to thinking about my boys. One was in Vietnam. One was in the ocean, the Atlantic someplace, and one was away to school. And I wrote them each one a note, and I said, I just was thinking about you, and I want you to know that I appreciate the fact that God gave you to me and put you in our family. Write them a note, but do something and tell them that you love them. Will you do that tonight? How many of you will do that? Put up your hand. Tonight, before you retire. Yes. My Father, teach us. We wish, Lord, that we could be like Thee to our children.